You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
The conversation I want to open up this hour is a very difficult conversation. I think it's one of those conversations where you probably initially have a clear view, and then when you work through the complexity, I think things become a bit more complicated. When is it, if at all, your duty to report on someone else's story, particularly a story of abuse and survival of abuse? And of course, the reason we're talking about this is that Twitter has been divided on whether broadcaster Masechaba Ndlovu was out of order or whether she was a shero for actually sticking up for another woman, for Babes Wodumo, telling her story of survival at the hands of an abuser. And this played out a couple of days ago. And I don't know, there's a lot about the story that has bothered me. And so I thought, let me get some women that have been opining on the matter over the last couple of days or have really strong views on it to be part of this conversation and see whether we can get out of our echo chambers on Twitter and hopefully have a more constructive conversation. So a couple of people are joining me. Some will join us in a couple of minutes as well. In our Cape Talk studio, we have Karen Morn, legal journalist at Tiso Blackstar and a producer on Checkpoint as well. Karen, thank you so much for making time for us.
Thanks, CCBS.
And then here in the studio with me, we've got journalist and carte blanche TV personality that says there's so much more than TV personality, is Claire Mawisa, whose tweets also caught my attention on this particular matter and who's come under fleck for her viewpoint. It's amazing how intolerant we are of seeing things differently. Claire, I obviously have made it in life.
Yes,
having you in my studio. Thank you so much for coming in.
So happy to be here. Thank you so much for the invite.
I want, for those people who may not have context, because we live in different parts of South Africa. Some people will hear about Babes Wodumo for the first time right now and wonder, what are you on about? So here's the context. We're going to play a little bit of a clip, hey Abel, and this will give you a sense of what happened when Metro FM DJ Masechaba Ndlovu on Friday afternoon confronted Babes Wodumo on allegations of abuse. And I want you to listen carefully to how it played out, and then you will have context for the question that we are posing today. We did reach out, by the way, to Masechaba. She spoke to us, but she's incredibly busy. I think she's got a breakfast show now as well on TV. So I know she would have done her best to be part of this conversation. But in a sense, it's not directly about her. It's about the broader issue. So although this played out on Metro, the big question here is, in general, how best can we lend support, if at all, to those who are survivors of abuse? So this is what happened on Friday afternoon.
So Babes Wodumo has made it to the show today with a brand new single. She's working on an album. She's not sure what the title of the album is, but maybe that's the stage in which she's at in terms of her project currently. But so much more is happening. And, she's been telling us honestly about the realities around her life and her situation at a private and personal level, which we appreciate, you know. And I think it's safe to say that a lot of people have questions around certain aspects of your life. And we are glad that you're willing to talk to us about that. How are you feeling right now?
I have mixed emotions, njengamanje, but I think ngizoba right.
Why do you have mixed emotions?
Because ngiyacabanga.
I said I wasn't going to do this. But Babes, you know, I think it needs to be said, because I hate to see a young woman as talented, as smart as you, living in so much fear, Babes Wodumo, right? You don't have to answer this question, but we all know, because we've heard from multiple sources, people who've witnessed the fact that you have been physically abused by Mampincha, that he has beaten you in your relationship. And right now, and I'm sorry, but right now you're sitting here, you're scared and you're worried about what's going to happen next. Because you told us a tiny little truth, which is the fact that he went onto your Instagram and posted a picture without your permission. And it's deeper than that. And I can see it in your eyes. You're still suffering. And I don't want you to continue to suffer. Mampincha has no right to put his hands on you. It's unacceptable.
Okay, do you think Masechaven Ndlovu was out of order, or do you think that she's a hero for really speaking up when it's very hard to speak out as a survivor? Give us a call throughout this conversation as you hear what my guests have to say. We have a third guest, by the way, Nolwazi Tusini, who's no stranger to the show. We love having her on because she thinks long and hard about these issues. A producer, radio producer, currently at Power 98.7, 2016 Ruth First Fellow, of course, and also a writer and a poet. Nolwazi, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me, UCB.
Claire, I want to start with you. What comes up for you even as you re-listen to how that conversation played out?
I watched the video clip of that conversation, and I was just watching Babes' body language, and it felt like she was shrinking as Masechaba was speaking. And my heart was pounding, and I was supremely triggered, and I felt that Masechaba was quite, I don't know if the word is aggressive. She was hard. She was coming down hard on Babes. And so many things went through my mind. And I could see that she, in my mind, I felt like Masechaba kind of centered herself in that moment. And did they care enough about Babes? Was this what she wanted? Did they ask for her consent? Is she okay? What happens after this interview? Is she safe? A lot of things came up for me. And I was like, in a radio environment, just to get somebody to be sitting as a guest, there's so much pre-planning that has to happen. So we know she's coming in. Especially on a music show, there's songs that are played, there's conversation that's happening, and I wanted to know what was the context, what were the conversations that happened before the mics went on. And later on in the conversation, it came out that Masechaba had known of the abuse for some time, and I wanted to know, was this the appropriate place to be dealing with this in this manner?
Makes sense.
And
yeah.
It just made me extremely uncomfortable.
Absolutely. That makes sense to me. Nolwazi, for you, and you've had some strong views that you, even as the conversation have had views and counter-views expressed, there's been a consistency over the last 2 days in your feelings about this.
Yes, I think I feel very, very strongly about it, because I think that we can't, in our activism, center our need to save people over the person's needs themselves. And I think that's what happened in that interview. I watched it. So I watched it on Babes' live video. And there was a moment that seemed, I think they were at ad break or whatnot, where they seemed to be discussing whether or not to go ahead with it. And then there's no resolution. Then they have to go back on air, which is understandable because, sure, you know, I understand how radio works. But I think that even though at that point when they had that quick discussion, there was no consent, right? And you could see throughout the interview that there was a particular bone that they wanted to pick, you know, that she didn't want to go there. So for example, they ask her, why did you guys break up? And she's like, no, we used to fight over work and whatnot. And they were like, fighting. What kind of fights were these?
Felt like they were goading.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, especially Mo Flavor. Are you pregnant? Are you pregnant? Are you dating someone?
Yeah. You know, so, and I remember when they asked her for details, she was just like, no, you want to put this in the papers. No, which is a very clear indication that I don't want to go any further.
Sure.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
And then Masechaba, by her own admission, had given a commitment that she wasn't going to go there.
Yeah.
But beyond that, for me, Eusebius, it's very important for me because as someone who identifies as a feminist, and even if you are not a feminist, you can participate in feminism. I believe that was a feminist act, or at least an act of activism. And for me, on Masechaba's part, right?
Okay.
Because she goes on to say, women are dying in this country.
So you've got some empathy for her.
I do, but the thing is, where my empathy runs out is that this is a matter of praxis for me, of how we enact our feminism, how we enact our activism, how we enact, and that's the excuse that people keep on giving. But women are dying in silence, and so we need to really delve down and talk about how we enact these things in a way that doesn't re-traumatize women, that actually holds men accountable, because that was not holding my bitch accountable. Yeah, that's not what happened.
I want to come back to that. And one example of the fact that he's not being held accountable is that, yeah, we are talking about Masi Chaba. Talking about him. I want to come back to that. But Karen, I wanted to ask you this. I was persuaded by the commentary online of many, many women, Noloazi's, Claire's, Piltusi, the criticism. But then what kept flashing back into my head was the Checkpoint episode you did, where you interviewed some of the people who were closest to Karabo Mokoena.
Yeah.
And many of them said, we had seen the early signs of abuse, but we didn't think we need to speak out, and today she's dead. And then I ask myself, how do I juxtapose the very cogent, loving criticism of Masi Chaba coming from folks like Claire and Noloazi, with the fact that if someone is dead, the same people who turn on Masi Chaba will ask, why didn't you speak out? You could have created a safer space. What comes up for you?
This is such a hard conversation. When I was 23 years old, I tutored a young woman at Rhodes. Her name was Boitumela Madloane. She was an amazing young woman, and she started dating this young guy. He was very shy. I remember seeing them in the quad once, and she had a rice grain with his name on her neck, and seemingly so, loving, etc. And then I remember speaking to one of the other tattlings about how she was doing, because she used to come to my res room a lot. We'd hang out, And I was like, where's this girl? And she said to me, no, she's just, we don't see her. She doesn't come out with us. And Belinda raising all these red flags about how she was withdrawing. And, the one I was working at the Cape Argus, I don't want to cry about this. Mm-hmm. I was working at the Cape Argus, and the editor said to me, I knew something was wrong. Mm-hmm. And I kept trying to push it with her and say, what's up? Like, she would just withdraw. Like, she was such a vivacious personality.
Yes.
And he said to me, a student's been murdered at Rhodes. See what you can find out, because he knew I was at Rhodes. And he forwarded me the email from the police. Mm. And I saw her name, and it took me 2 seconds before I saw her name, and I knew it was her. Mm. And I wish we'd said, I'd pushed it, or Belinda, or any of us. We knew something was wrong. We knew something was wrong. And I've literally done, I was trying to count, like, maybe over 100 intimate femicide murders. Mm. It's always the same story, Eusebius.
Yeah.
Like, it's always the same story. People will tell you afterwards, we were aware, we saw marks, she didn't want to say anything. Sometimes they find out right at the end. And then, I've had stories of women dying with protection orders in their hands. And my tragedy with this whole thing is that it's exactly what you said. We're centering this conversation on Masi Chaba. I read that interview differently. Mm. And when Babe said, when they're asking her, what are you going to do? And she was like, Angiazi, I don't know. Mm. And then when Masi Chaba was saying, this is not, women are dying, she was nodding. I think we can't ignore the fact that people in these situations, women in these situations, are so disempowered. And physical abuse comes after a lot of emotional abuse. I've done these stories. It's about undermining person to a point. By the time he starts hitting you, you think you deserve it. Mm. And I'm not saying what happened was right or wrong. I don't think it's that clear cut. But we can't ignore the fact that we live in a society where, in other instances, I've had to intervene in two circumstances of people that I cared about, where I had to get them out of abusive situations.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't ignore that dynamic.
Absolutely. 19 minutes after 10, plenty of your calls coming in. And there's a complexity. I think you've already feel it in the remarks of my guests. Let's take a bit of a break, and then we'll take some of your calls.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
22 minutes after 10, we're having a very necessary conversation around the agency of abused women. One can be a survivor and a victim of abuse. It doesn't mean that your agency is undermined. But how do we square the circle? genuinely respecting the inherent dignity of a survivor and their voice with the reality that sometimes someone does need an intervention. How do we get that balance right? And what does that even mean? And I am delighted to be in conversation with Karen Morn, Nolwazi Tusini, and Claire Mawisa, three absolutely powerful South Africans. Let's go to the phone lines. Helen, good morning to you, and thank you for holding on.
Yes, hi. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you, Helen.
Thank you for having this necessary conversation. My view is that I agree. Abuse of women is extremely unacceptable, and the country needs to have more forums and public government law enforcement spaces to deal with it. But exposing it publicly on Twitter without giving the other party the right to defend himself, I think was completely unacceptable. And there needs to be something done about not only physical abuse, but the South Africa seems to have a very big trend happening to just mentally defame people as well. It's emotional abuse and physical abuse cannot just be publicly slandered. And I think we need to learn from countries like America, where we all joke and mock about how Americans just sue each other for every, you know, absolutely everything. But it, exposing somebody on public media without it actually having become a legal issue is not the right place.
Helen, let me understand you correctly before we make assumptions about what you are saying, because obviously it's a very emotional issue, so sometimes we misspeak. Do you mean hearing the side of the alleged perpetrator, I just want to make sure that I understand what it is that you are cautioning again.
This is a domestic violence case, and it's very close to my heart. You know, I represented a young lady called Gabasile Nkosi, and she had done a lot of very high-profile art. We took her to America, and she was all about domestic violence because she was being domestically abused. And I followed her story quite closely. She had reported it repeatedly to the police, and repeatedly it got worse because the police were doing absolutely nothing about it. So I think the big story here is, you know, domestic violence is always going to be out there. There's always going to be people abusing children, women, and women abusing men as well. But the issue is, this cannot be a public forum, because then the platform of the public shame, guilt, naming, name calling, that becomes an abuse in its own right.
Okay. We've got lots of calls, but this is such an important and big sub-theme that I wanted to get to later, Claire. I think we should probably go there. You just as puzzled at me and also shaking your head at what Helen is saying, because
okay.
I need to collect my thoughts.
At no point do I say that we should not speak about her abuse. I just wanted to make sure that we had protected babes in the situation, that the victim of abuse was the one that there was a plan, there was a strategy, that there were things that were going to roll out to make sure that she had the necessary support afterwards. That was my main intention. The fact that Mampintsha abused her, I do not doubt that. He is trash. Mampintsha,
especially after that statement.
I don't need to hear from him. I do not. I've written him off. My concern was mostly about how is Babes processing this? Was she willing to be outed? This is something that she should have driven. The process of disclosing her own abuse, telling her story. That was my main concern, because I felt like now we are bullying her. This is a different level of being bullied, by making sure that now 5 million people across the nation, in a short little snippet, now know intimate details about her life that maybe she wasn't ready to share it to that extent. So I was never not wanting her to then maybe at a later stage come out and share her abuse and what has happened to her. But I just wanted her to drive that process. So I don't understand what Helen is saying there about protecting. It sounds like she's saying we must protect the abuser or the...
Yeah. But also, Nolwazi, reflect for me just on... And we had this conversation on the show last week, but it's maybe one we need to keep coming back to. This deference to legal processes. We're never going to win the battle against gender inequality and abuse by deferring to the criminal justice system. Yeah. The criminal justice system is not even a friend of women.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I think that I always roll my eyes a little bit, which was part of what upset me on when I was watching on Friday, because at some point Mo says to her, "You must do something about it. I don't know what you're going to do, but you must do something about it," which for me harkens back to saying to women, trust this legal system that will not be your friend, that will re-traumatize you, but you must, in order. And it's almost just like, because if you don't, then it invalidates, you know, the fact that this happened. And I just want to make it clear that I am not saying that domestic violence is a private matter between two people that should be kept in the family. It is absolutely not.
Okay.
It is not. But what I am saying is that it is still important in us speaking about it to ensure that the ways in which we do it are ways that create safe spaces and respect the agency of abuse survivors and abuse victims, to take into consideration that they do not owe us their stories. They don't owe that to us.
That's right. Sizwe, good morning.
Hi, Sizwe, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you, Sizwe. What do you want to say?
I'm good, man. Ash, you know, for me, this is something that really hits close to my heart, because my mother was a victim of abuse, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard the interview, it was actually my girlfriend played it to me, and I just felt so disgusted in the way that it was taken forward. Because, I mean, look what's happening now. Instead of us focusing on the interview and what was going on, here we are focusing on that this whole situation was not supposed to happen, in that she's saying that no, Ubezo Duma was injured by this guy and so on, which is all good and fabulous. But I think if she was really trying to be helpful and she was genuine, she should have kept quiet, went to the police, and clearly, like she said, she knew, she's been knowing about the situation. So why is it that when she came on radio, she all of a sudden had the guts to now speak about it and literally sensationalize it, rather go to a private setting where she goes to the police, reports it on behalf of Ubabe so that Babes can be able to get assistance? I mean, the way she went, it even felt like I was watching an episode of Third Degree, saying that Babes, you know, that Babes was having, this guy was breaking her legs and so on. That's just stuff that you don't want to, people to know about, you know. And to me, it started looking like now she was actually abusing. That's why I think she was actually abusing Ubabe, because, I mean, if she was really helpful, she should have rather went to the police and sorted it out there. And the fact that she said that she's too busy to come on radio, she must come, because now she's made it a point to put Babes' information and business on air. She must come and answer on air as well and be able to tell us, what were you thinking? I mean, does it really make sense for you to be able to go on a radio station and then just go up and just tell people that, yeah, this lady's legs are getting broken? Or I know that intentions were good, but maybe she also had selfish intentions in some way to get more ratings to come to Metro FM, or if her producer told her to say it. I just think it's absolutely unacceptable, and she should have, the first thing that radio station should have been is, how do we protect your babes? Not how do we make money and benefit from Braves' story. That's absolutely appalling.
Okay, thank you, Sizwe.
Eusebius Makaiser on your number one news and talk station.
Karen, I want to ask you a question here just about the journalistic ethics of how we deal with this matter. And again, we're looking here at one example, but there's a broader question here. There's a question of, obviously, a code of, you know, conduct that we all swear by within the media, but sometimes we are called upon to think even more empathetically about the people whose stories we are reporting on. I shared with my listeners this morning how the person not cited in the Sunday Times story yesterday as someone else that reportedly had laid a charge against Danny Yordan, that person is in massive distress. They feel more unsafe, because although in that particular case the Sunday Times said, we do not have permission to mention this person, the details in there, some of which is, by the way, factually inaccurate, but there's enough detail in there for Danny Yordan to know exactly who it is that they were writing about. That woman, as we speak, and I know this because I've spoken to her, feels incredibly unsafe. What is our journalistic duty where we want to be activist journalists making a difference in the fight against toxic masculinity? And at the same time, it's all fine and well to say this is about bringing about systemic change in society, but for the individual person who becomes sacrificed in that broader fight, their individual life may be worse off after we've written about them in the interest of some long-term goal.
I don't think it's one or the other, and I personally believe that you have to be a human being first and a journalist second. And I think that's something that's just sustained me throughout my career, because you don't go and tell a story without speaking to the person who it directly affects and saying, you know, I mean, if I write a story or tell a story or produce a story, the person who's in it knows exactly how they're being reflected, particularly in circumstances where they're disclosing something that puts them at a point of vulnerability. You know, we've got immense power. I mean, with the Baby M story, you know, that little one was in Mozambique. No one was doing anything. You know, obviously the way in which the Department of Social Development reacted and then trying to out the father as the baby's rapist, etc., was extremely legally problematic. But you can do that story in a way where the child is removed to a place of safety and she's going to be, you know, she has a better chance. And in circumstances where I have reported on abuse matters, you know, my tragedy is that I always, pretty much always telling the story when the person is gone. And then it becomes a process of actually working with the family, working with the people who love this woman to try and tell her story in a balanced and fair way. But when it's a living survivor, you can't re-traumatize them. I think the thing for me is it's just being a human being first and saying, what are you comfortable with? And I have had situations where someone has wanted to tell their story and then had second thoughts. And I've said, that's fine. We don't have to do it now. And then maybe 2 months later, 3 weeks later, then they come back. But you don't force people into situations where they're already traumatized from what has happened to them. You have to, it's so hard because our society is so thoroughly abnormal. And, you know, the way in which men and women interact is so thoroughly abnormal. And we are having a conversation in which we're not asking Mapincha to explain why, you know, he would have thought it would be appropriate to allegedly break a young woman's legs or slam her or do whatever he did. We don't ask him, why did you keep hitting her? Why did you feel it was appropriate to domestically abuse her? We don't ask men who murder their spouses to explain themselves, but we ask Masachaba to explain herself. We ask the survivors of abuse who come forward to explain themselves, because the power dynamic is so skewed. But I think the most important thing is it's about giving survivors agency. And as journalists, I think it's that thing of, if you want to tell your story, I will help you tell your story when you are ready to tell your story and in the way that you want to.
Nolwazi?
I really, and this is what I was saying to you off air, I believe that this conversation, that holding Masachaba urgent or women rather for their actions, I believe it urgent, and I'll explain to you why, which I've said off air, but for the benefit of the listeners.
Please do, because a lot of people, what you're about to respond to, I have at least 20 tweets asking that question of you and Claire.
So why Masachaba and not Mapincha? Right. First of all, I'm doing both. First of all, just because I'm having this particular right now and choosing this focus doesn't mean that Mapincha is now off the hook. Right. It means that right now this is the focus. And I'll tell you why this is urgent for me. It's urgent because, number one, the first reason is I see women every single day do this work to fight domestic violence and gender-based violence in general, be it sexual, be it physical. Every single day, women are doing the work in many different ways we do it, right? And so to suggest that because in this particular instance, we're parking him for a while in order to focus on one of our own, and to suggest that that means we're letting him off the hook, I offends me. And I think is dishonest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the second bit is the reason why this is urgent is because if we acknowledge that this world, this country is inherently unsafe for women, right? And we are fighting this because we want to make the world safe. We have to be each other's safe place. Mm-hmm. Right? And if you're going to be an activist in this space, then you must be safe. And that was not safe for her. That was not safe for babes. If you're going to be an activist in the space, you can't also perpetuate the cycles of abuse, which is based on removing women's agency, which is based on not treating women with dignity and as full human beings.
Sure.
With a right to self-determine, which is what happened here.
Yeah.
And so this is urgent.
Yeah. I hear you. Claire, are you covered by that?
I'm so covered by that. I am so covered. I think that's what we want to make sure that in future, we're not reckless about it. We are not in making the situation worse. And so I don't know how it turned around on Twitter that suddenly we were defending and protecting Mampinja. Can't even wrap my head around how people made that jump from us saying, check yourself, Masichaba, that made us uncomfortable. Yes, okay, hopefully now we can put steps in to make sure that babes are safe. But I don't know how that tangent and jumped and quantum leapt to that we are protecting Mampinja or we are advocating for, we are not.
Weird jumps in.
I think my difficulty is that, you know, within the debates that happen in South Africa, we tend to be very binary. So someone is either, it's either good, bad, you know, black, white, right, wrong. It's very binary. And I think what I have been quite disturbed by is that there's been a lot of kind of personal attacks on Masichaba, suggesting that this was, you know, even that other caller suggesting that she did this out of a desire to further her own career. And I think that's very problematic because what she did, and all of us in the broadcast space would know, in a live situation was incredibly risky for her as well. And I think we can't take for granted that she may have had the absolute, and I think the guests have actually both, you know, but we've all acknowledged that this was a very risky thing for her to do. Yeah. Maybe it was problematic. You know, that we can have a debate about how she did it and whatever. But I think it's very problematic to seek to demonize her as somehow trying to further her own career through sensationalism, where I genuinely believe that she came from a very good place with this.
Absolutely.
I agree with Karen on that.
Sipho, thank you so much for holding on and welcome to this discussion.
Hi. I'd just like to address this whole issue because as an abuse survivor, an abuse and rape survivor, from a person who was my boyfriend at the time, it took me a while to actually come out and say, this is what happened to me. It took me, I'm sure, like 2 years to actually come out and say, this is what happened, because there's a lot of pain and shame that comes with abuse and acknowledging that this is actually something that happened to me. So it would have been fair, I believe, on Babe's side to say, okay, no, let's empower her to a point where she is comfortable to talk about it. Because even today, my mother doesn't know the full story or the extent of the abuse that I went through, because there's still that I can't really face up to it. You know, I have to get to a point where I am able to say, Mom, this is what actually happened. And we sit down and we talk about it, where I am actually empowered to talk about it. But it's not fair. It'll only extend the amount of pain that she has to endure when she realizes that everybody knows what I went through, and now I have to pick myself up from what everybody knows about me,
Absolutely.
And what I also need to know and nurture about myself. You know,
Sipho, thank you for sharing that. We're going to take a break. Such a beautiful point that, absolutely. Mm. And Claire's been making this point off air as well, that the intentions might be pure on the part of me as a broadcaster, but the effects of my good intentions may not always be well thought through. There will be someone in the life of Babes who will go, wow, cousin, why didn't you tell us? And she has got to now repair maybe even mistrust that has crept in into her own web of interpersonal relationships long after speaking to Mo Flavor and Masichaba.
Your CBS Makaiza on 702 and Cape Talk.
Before we take our last round of calls on this, Nsako, Lucky, Tenolo, I'm going to come to you in a second. There's an important class part of this conversation or demographic element of this conversation, Claire, that you opened up before. It's also interesting, isn't it, to be brutally honest about when a maternalistic instinct, an instinct to be auntie, kicks in.
I just, as I watched it again and again, I wanted to know, would this have played out completely differently if it was Claire sitting opposite Masichaba? So maybe a peer. So if I, at 39 years old, if she knew what she knew about my life, would she have confronted me in that tone and in that manner? Would she have gone as hard? Would she have continued being a juggernaut through all of my barriers? Or would she have done that if I was older? Would she have done that? And then I realized maybe not. And that was also something that quite bothered me, because I felt like her age and her, we can't ignore the fact that, you know, our dynamic, our power dynamic,
yeah,
is affected by our age and culture and tradition and what we understand. And so we come
language.
Into a language.
Yeah.
So when we come into a studio environment, mm, those roles are still in place. And so, yeah, it really felt like Ubabes was in Ghana, like a young girl, and Masichaba was going to do the right thing. And we all know that our parents have always tried to do the right thing, and sometimes they do not get it right, even if the intention was a good intention. So it really made me feel like, wow, this would have played out completely different if I was sitting in Babes' seat and if I was the one,
sure,
that had been a survivor,
sure,
of abuse.
I understand, yeah. Tsenolo, good morning.
Good morning, Eusebius. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
I'm good, thanks. I'm coming with the point of center of influence, and in particular, I was looking at Mampinja and looking at the state of our nation and generally how individuals idolize men like him. Mm. It's, I would say, unfortunately, with the celebrity status, you are going to have more attention focused on you, and so comes the shaming. So comes on Twitter, social media. Yet it must make it. Though it's got a negative, how do I put this, aspect to it, it's, mm, in a sense, from a different perspective, it addresses an issue of men in the public space, for example, who are going through situations like this and need to be held accountable, I would say, to a certain level, though they do have their rights. But with their responsibility as celebrity, they need to realize that they're influencing a generation of young men,
yeah,
people aged themselves, yeah, around the same
but
age.
But just in the interest of time, so, can't we do, yeah, all of these things at the same time? Like Noluazi was saying,
okay,
firstly, many women like her are doing the work that others are saying they are not doing. But in the meantime, you, me, and Mapincha,
yeah,
can have a conversation about our toxic masculinity.
Mm. About our?
The ways in which we hate women. The ways in which we were raised to see women as our chattel, and what we're going to do to make sure that we unlearn the bad habits, and how we're going to raise the younger ones in our lives, little boys in our lives, mentees in our lives, how we're going to raise them to be better men than we are. All, mm-hmm, I'm suggesting is that the opposite of this conversation is not letting men off the hook.
Yeah. That I understand as well. That was not the premise of why I was coming through this. My thing was that though this has been taking place, a man such as Mampincha in this case should be looked at, you know what, let us consider addressing him more. Not that we're not addressing, mm-hmm, him, not that we're not shaming him, but let us consider the fact that this is what women in this place are getting.
Oh, we just lost him there, but thank you so much for calling in. Lucky, you've been waiting. What do you want to say, Lucky?
Hello, sir. I'm just shocked and surprised that people are defending the perpetrators, and Masichaba is labeled as aggressive and abusive.
Lucky, you've been holding on for 36 minutes. How could you possibly have misheard so spectacular? None of my guests have defended the perpetrator. Or are you talking about other people?
No, I'm talking about I'm the guest there, and also I just want to say that. You mentioned something about Garabo's friends and what they went through. They're trying to explain that if they had done what Masichaba has done, chances are Garabo will still be alive today. They regret not saying something, not doing something. So sometimes when you do the right thing, it's not easy, and it might come out as wrong, but at the end of the day, the goal is to save someone. If someone is drowning, you cannot ask them, do you need help, should we help you? If someone is drowning and they say, no, I don't need help, you still must help them, because they don't want the help, but they need the help. Babes is drowning. She does not want the help, but she needed the help. So I think Masichaba did the right thing by helping her, even though it has consequences. But at the end of the day, Mampincha is exposed, and chances are he will not abuse her anymore because of what Mashaba has done.
And Lucky, come on, from one man to another man. Do you really think Mapincha gives a damn for what Mashaba thinks about him? Because the other spectacular assumption here is that a safe space is now being created. Do you think men like us really care for what Master Chaba is going to say about us on Metro FM?
Well, most men don't, but I do, and I also believe that because he's been exposed, chances are he's not going to do it anymore because now he's been exposed. So he's been stopped in a way to do what he's been doing because it's been hidden. People knew about it. People, chances are, they even advised Paige to go report, but she didn't want to because she's afraid. But now that it's all out, in time, she will be happy that Mashaba did what she did.
You know, Lucky, Lord, I wish it was that simple.
Oh, my God.
If it was that simple, Danny Yordan would not pop up every single day for a photo opportunity with fellow powerful men. Claire?
Do you know, I don't even know where to begin. Do you know, a thing that I wanted to also find out is that we don't know the inner workings of that relationship. Babes had already left Mampincha, to my understanding.
Yes, she had.
She had already taken her own power back by leaving him long before she came to the radio station. So note, point for her. She had already disclosed to people that he had hacked into her Instagram and uploaded a picture. So that content came out from her willingly. Mm. And I'm like, we need to also go at her pace. She is the person that sets the pace for this conversation. It was Babes' speed that we needed to go at, not anyone else's. Okay. And I don't want anyone to think, guys, Mampincha is trash. Like, at no point, in no way could you ever move away from that.
I think
point.
An important point here is that women are actually at their most vulnerable when they do leave. And pretty much all of the murders I've done have been after the women have left. So this idea that leaving makes you invulnerable to abuse is not correct.
Yes.
In fact, it makes you the most vulnerable. You need the most protection. And your abuser needs to be aware that his actions are known and exposed. And if anything happens to that survivor, he will be the first person in the line of fire. I think that's the point that needs to be made.
Such a beautiful and important point. Mm. Absolutely. There's nothing that touches men with toxic masculinity more than feeling emasculated that you come home to an empty flat.
Mm.
So the safety is not guaranteed. 1 minute, have the final say for me, Noloazi. Where to from here?
I would like to say that at the point at which we allow for women, particular women who are victims of and are survivors of any kind of violence, at the point at which we are okay with them being the collateral damage for the greater cause, then I believe we've lost our way. And there is no space and no time where I will say it's okay because other women are dying. And no, she cannot be a victim. And then we, in our activism, also make her collateral damage because of that. No,
absolutely.
We can't be doing it in that way.
Claire, thanks for coming in so much. Really appreciate it.
Noloazi,
thank you as always for your insights. And Karen, thank you as always for your empathy and excellent journalism on this material. Thanks so much for coming to the Cape Talk studio.
Thanks for having me, Eusebius.